couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's new movies include The Secret Garden, Samsan, The Burnt Orange Heresy, Black is King, and An American Pickle. I'm also going to be talking about some news, The Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup, featuring a spotlight on black books. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big news that happened this week is now that Warner Brothers has figured out what it's going to do with Tenet, and if you recall, that is releasing it internationally the beginning of September and doing a national rollout in wherever it can on Labor Day weekend, with the previous week being a 10th anniversary release of Inception. So basically, Warner Brothers has said, okay, we're just going to release this movie in whatever theaters can handle it, because we need to get it in the theaters, but they want to get it released. Because I think the hype's up for this. Will the hype last for another year? Who knows? But they would have to be continually hyping it over the next multiple months, and that costs money for advertising, and the longer the movie is not making money, the longer it basically exists in the red before they can put it out there and get money to put it in the black. So now that Warner Brothers knows what they're doing with that, the next player in this cinematic game of chicken is Disney with Mulan. And there's been a lot of speculation about this because they want to release this. And I know they want to get it overseas, because this is going to be a big international box office for this movie, mainly because it's a Chinese movie. It's got Chinese actors in it. It's got a very Chinese story to it. It's going to do extremely well in the Middle Kingdom, as well as other Asian countries. And so they want it out there. Again, they have the hype. They have the buzz. It costs millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars to keep that buzz going on. So Disney has finally said, all right, here's what we're going to do with Mulan. They're going to release it internationally theatrically. But in America, on September 4th, they're releasing it on Disney Plus. However, it's a little bit different than some of their other delayed releases that ended up on Disney Plus. Whereas, like, next week, you've got the one and only Ivan showing up on Disney Plus. That was originally supposed to be a theatrical release. You had Artemis Fowl earlier this summer. That was supposed to be a theatrical release. Of course, you had Hamilton, famously brought early into the timeline. That wasn't even supposed to come out till next year, and they decided to put it on Disney Plus around the 4th of July. Now, in the process of doing that, they've beefed up their subscription. I read somewhere that the number of subscriptions to Disney Plus is over 60 million, which is phenomenal. And I mean, it's not that expensive, really. It's like $5 a month. But, you know, some people are hurting, and every little charge for any streaming service can be a lot of money to a great number of people in this country. But still, 60 million accounts are out there. And that means that hundreds of millions of people are watching it. I mean, we have an account in our house. We got 5 people who can end up watching that. But instead of just dropping it on Disney Plus and kind of writing off the theatrical viewing of it as a loss and hoping that it'll be a leader into getting the more monthly subscribers, because they've well more than hit their limit of what they wanted to for subscribers this summer, they're going to have an add-on fee to this, which basically means you still have to pay $30 to watch Mulan, which, if you note, is $10 more than the standard on-demand stuff like Trolls and Scoob when they went on-demand, premium video on-demand earlier this summer. On the first blanch, that looks like it's a gouge, but it really isn't. Let's put it this way. They're trying to give it as an exclusive to people who watch Disney, but they also realize a movie like Mulan, you're going to watch with the whole family. Very few people are going to be the one single adult sitting there watching Mulan and nobody else. Unless you really got some sort of fantastic coupon, you're probably looking at spending close to $20 or $30 just to get everybody to walk in the door. And that's assuming that you were able to go in like an afternoon matinee where it was $5. But if you're talking about a premium price seating, you're talking about somebody paying $10 or more per seat, you take two kids and you're at that price. So it still makes sense if you've got a household of kids, or you could do an outdoor in your backyard and invite, you know, 10 people over and watch it. And each person is basically, it's a per annum of $3. So Disney knows people are going to bulk watch this, so that's why they're going to add it as a $30. And this is also a test run. This is to see if this works. Because if this works, do not be surprised if you suddenly see stuff like Black Widow show up on Disney Plus with a prime rate. Anything that would be a future Marvel or Star Wars or any sort of big blockbuster film. This is Disney seeing what the market will do in this situation. So this may have impacts long past the pandemic. Now, in the wake of the Disney Mulan deal, Bill and Ted is now moving up a week. That's going to be coming out August 28th, and that's in theaters and on demand, premium on demand. And then the movie Antebellum, which was originally supposed to come out in August, I think, that's been moved to premium video on demand in September. I think what's happened is the studios have looked and they said, okay, look, we're not going to get theaters open. We're having all these problems with schools opening. We're already seeing horror stories of teachers and students getting sick on the first day or whatever, and people running around in crowded hallways with no masks on. They're like, I don't expect theaters to be open anytime soon. So the studios are saying, we are now going to adopt the post-summer on-demand market, and that's what you're going to start seeing. Things are going to be pulled from release very soon or put premium on demand. I think everyone's going to wait to see what happens after Labor Day to see how successful Mulan is. And if that does well, do not be surprised if other big titles like superhero films like Wonder Woman or Black Widow or even James Bond, although I think that's a long stretch, will start seeing some sort of on-demand hybrid marketing scheme. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is a film called Rogue. No, it's not the one about the giant alligator. It's about the giant lion. I think it's going to be available on Apple TV. I've seen it as just VOD, but I think Apple TV snatched it up, and it's going to be coming out on August 28th.
We lost the Osprey extraction. We have the governor's daughter. I promised I would keep her safe. We have a militia group in close proximity. They will come for us.
I wonder what this place is.
No one here.
Okay, but where did they go? Looks like the driver was cut up and dragged out.
About what?
He's torn to pieces.
A lion got him.
This one has Megan Fox fighting a lion. This was supposed to, I think, have a theatrical release, but this would look like it would have been a late August, early September release anyways. I did not expect this one to make a ton of money. It doesn't look like it's, going to break any records. It looks like just your standard action film, and this one I don't think is going to be heard at all going to video on demand. Now, the next one I want to talk about is Kajillionaire, which opens in theaters on September 18th.
Most people want to be kajillionaires. That's the dream. That's how they get you hooked. Hooked on sugar, hooked on caffeine. Ha ha ha, cry, cry, cry. Me, I prefer to just skim.
So do I.
They are real characters, super unique. But you vouch for them, right?
She learned to forge before she learned to write. Oh, actually, that's how she did learn to write.
My favorite movies are the Ocean 11 movies.
This is exactly the kind of thing that I've been wanting.
This one was somewhat of a modest hit at Sundance this year. I mean, Sundance seems like it's like 10 years ago. Kajillionaire looks like an interesting movie. It stars Evan Rachel Wood, and I'm not convinced with her acting in the trailer. She seems overly downtrodden to it. But of course, it has Laura Linney and Richard Jenkins in it, and they're good. But it certainly has that sort of 90s independent film feel to it, where it's examining the lives of, let's just say, less than honest people. But, you know, hey, it's in theaters. It'll probably be a VOD day and date release as well on September 18th. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Black is King and Sam Sam.
Chihuahua.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. The first one I want to hit is Black is King. This is on Disney Plus. Beyonce directs this visual album inspired by the story of the Lion King about a young child brought up in Africa.
You, who were formed by the heat of the galaxy. What a thing to be, both unique and familiar. To be one in the same. And still, unlike any other. Life is a set of choices.
This was one of those movies that I don't know if it was ever going to come to theaters. I think their plan was to put it in theaters, but if this was going to be put in theaters, it was going to be in a downtime anyways. It would have shown up as a September release or an August release. It was not going to go head-to-head with the big money makers in the summer or in holiday season. Beyonce was in the remake of The Lion King, the photorealistic CGI version of it that came out last year. She played Nala. And as part of co-marketing for that, she had released an album that came out last summer. If I get any of this wrong, my apologies. I don't follow Beyonce. I have nothing against Beyonce. I'm not really into her music. I've never bought a Beyonce song or album or knowingly sat down and listened to them. Again, has nothing against her as an artist or person. It's just, I don't care. You know, it's not my cup of tea. It's not my wheelhouse. So I'm coming at this completely blind. So she did this album that came out last year and then they made a movie of it. And it says it's directed by Beyonce. I don't know how much is directed by Beyonce. A lot of times when you have a star or somebody wearing multiple hats, the term directed by is sort of a co-directing credit that's used more for the vision. And then like the nitty gritty dirty work is done by somebody else. And that's not a strike against Beyonce. She's good at what she does, but she's not a director of film. That's not her forte, and that's not what she's been doing. This was her chance to just get her name on there. And it certainly is going to turn more heads when you say it's Beyonce's film than whoever this co-director is that did it with her. But this is essentially, it's a visual album. You have to like Beyonce's music to like it, because that's what it is. Now, it has other guest artists in there. It's not only Beyonce stuff, but it's all that same sort of style, and it tells this story. There's a very, very, very loosely told story about this kid, a young boy who grows up, and they pepper in the lines from The Lion King with James Earl Jones speaking as Mustafa, saying different things throughout from the movie. The plot, there's really no plot to this. I mean, I guess you could say you're tracking this story, this kid growing up and dealing with, you know, the sort of like the Mother Earth all the way through, you know, elements of warlords and kingdoms and such. That's not just lions. But ultimately it's if you like the music. I mean, like I heard the first couple songs of it, I realized I'm like, this is just a batch of music videos. This is really what it is. Now they're beautifully shot and they're incredibly well staged. I mean, this is a far cry from just some crappy low rent music video. It's exactly what you'd expect from a Beyonce music videos, but they're layered and complex and they use a lot of innovative filmmaking techniques. It's not just like single ladies with the three of them dancing or anything like that. But it is a lot of Beyonce's ego on display. And again, that's not necessarily a dig. That's kind of how music videos work. And look, you know, if you like to look at Beyonce wiggling her hips and wearing sexy clothes, this movie's for you. It runs about 90 minutes long. For me, it was fine. I have no interest in this. It's not my thing, but it's like there's nothing bad about it. And I do look at it as like it's a beautifully shot film. It's very striking from a visual aspect and from a filmmaking aspect. But really, the only people this is going to appeal to are people who like Beyonce and her music. If you've never bought a Beyonce album, probably not something you got to run out and get. But it is available on Disney Plus. It's available. Anyone can watch it who's got the service. And for that matter, for what it's trying to do, I think it achieves what its goals are. So I'm going to have to give it a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next review, which is Sam Sam. On a planet of superheroes, this child is waiting for his first powers to appear and ends up befriending the daughter of a ruthless ruler from another planet.
Meet Sam Sam, the smallest of the greatest heroes.
Minimize! But he hasn't got any powers yet.
Sweetie, your powers are in you. You'll find them very soon.
When the villain Marshall threatens their world, Sam Sam will have to save the day.
I am King Marshall the First!
Oh, no!
I'm Megalactic. You have a ton of powers. I thought maybe you could teach me how to find one.
Now, first of all, a little bit of context and history about this. This is, I believe, a French production. It's preschool programming, really, is what it is. And it's a series. There's actually a series called Sam Sam in France. And it's essential preschool programming. It's about the level of, you know, almost any, you know, like Paw Patrol in America. The show that it reminds me the most of, and look, I do not have an exhaustive knowledge of preschool programming, but until very recently, I've been taking care of my cousins, who, you know, 4 or 5 years old. And so they've been watching preschool programming and they'd watch stuff like Dino Trucks and even Paw Patrol and, a couple of these other shows. The one it reminds me a little bit of is PJ Masks. If you've not seen PJ Masks in America, it's these kids, they put on their PJs and they put on masks and they become superheroes. But that's basically what this is. This kid's a superhero, but it's not like them pretending. He lives in this world, literally on this world, this planet, with his parents, and they're superheroes, but he hasn't gone through superhero puberty yet, I guess, is what happened. And there's this, dictator, this evil ruler that's like a pickle guy from another planet. And he's mean and he just wants to get rid of all the happy people. I mean, very typical preschool programming ideas and plots. Not a whole lot of depth to it because it's made for, you know, children who are just a couple years old. And the daughter of this pickle guy ends up becoming friends with him, and they have to stop this monster that he creates that's going to make everybody sad and disappointed because the pickle guy doesn't like kids laughing. I mean, that's a very standard type of plot for a kids show, a preschool program. And it's a mad, insane plot for a James Bond movie, but it totally plays for a kids movie. And you know, this thing's like 70 minutes long. Like I said, it's based on a series. So it's sort of like the movie version of the series, but we don't watch it in America. I mean, the French I are probably more excited about this, but I mean, it's cute enough. It's something different. And if you're looking for something different and you got kids at home and, or maybe you're facing a couple more months of distance learning with the kids at home and you want new content, here's some new content. I wouldn't show it to anybody over 5. They might get bored with it, but I mean, it's cute enough for what it is. I enjoyed it. I mean, it's a kids movie. I wish I could have shown it to my cousins, because they're a lot more to the target market, but you know, just schedules and such didn't work out. So I'm still going to say that Sam Sam is cute enough, and I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Secret Garden and The Burnt Orange Heresy. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. And this was probably the biggest one this weekend, and that's The Secret Garden. After losing her parents, a girl is sent to live with her uncle at his estate, where she discovers her bedridden cousin and a hidden garden kept by her mother, which may have magical powers.
My name is Mary Lennox, and my uncle owns this house.
I'm Colin Craven, and the uncle you speak of is my father.
A cousin?
When was the last time you used your chair?
I've never been able to walk.
We could go outside and who knows? You might feel better.
I'm trying to tell you.
I know of a magical place.
Capable of extraordinary things.
I'd say that you were lying.
Do you trust me?
You know what you risk? It's worth the risk.
First of all, this was supposed to come out a couple months ago. Like so many movies we had this spring, it got booted into this VOD purgatory that we're fiddling through right now. So this was supposed to have a major release date, and they moved it around. Now they're dropping it here, and it's a VOD, premium VOD. I believe you can get it in some theaters. It just all depends on what's open. So many theaters are still closed that it just depends on what your local theaters or even the people who run them, because they're all independent, what they're booking. Now, The Secret Garden is based on a book that came out back in 1911, and it's been made into a movie multiple times. The most recent one they did was in 1993, and I know there's a lot of people who adore that movie, and I know there's a lot of people who adore the book. I'm just going to warn you right now, I've never seen any other adaptation of it, and I've not read the book. So I'm coming in this completely cold. I don't know if this is a good adaptation or not. I don't know if they're being truthful to the story or not. And I don't know how this compares to the other movies, because, well, gosh, it's been, what, 27 years since the last one came out, and I didn't see that one. So, you know, yeah, that's, I do not have the background necessarily to give you a comprehensive look at this. I can just talk about how this movie works for me as it is. Now, there's some good actors in it. In fact, the one who plays the girl, I think she was in that movie from last week, that Summerland movie. She's a good little actress. She's finding her own, and she really kind of holds the story on her shoulders. She does a great job. Colin Firth plays the uncle, and he's good at almost everything he does. I wish they'd give him a little bit more, and they would have fleshed him out a little bit better. But, I mean, the cast is actually quite good in this film, and it's a beautifully shot movie. It is gorgeous. I mean, from a cinematography perspective, it's really a lush-looking film. And they balance between sort of the drab darkness of inside the house and the vibrant beauty of the garden, as well as the vibrant beauty of her memories with her family before they died. Now, the story is, it's the girl's story, and she, of course, is dealing with her somewhat contentious cousin who is an invalid, and he's sickly. They never explain exactly what his sickness is, but there seems to be this subtext that the mental ailments are manifesting in a physical way on a lot of these people. So this kid is having a lot of mental anguish and emotional anguish, and that's manifesting him inability to walk and the inability to get around. But of course, going to this garden kind of has these rejuvenative powers to it. What's interesting about it is it really cautiously treads around the magical element to this. And this is where I don't know how relevant it is to the other versions or the original book. The garden has a magical influence on them, but they almost don't even recognize it, almost as if it's subconscious. And it has healing properties, and maybe it heals the physical part of their body, but it also might just heal their emotions. It might just give them some rejuvenation from a mental standpoint, and that's what is then transferred to their ability to move around. I mean, it's kind of this really loosey-goosey psychosomatic syndrome that doesn't try to really deconstruct mental illness or deconstruct mental problems or emotional issues, but it's more or less this symbolic nature of it. And I've not seen the other movies. I've not read the book. I don't know how accurate it is. I wish they would have doubled down a little bit more on the magic, because at a certain point, it feels like they try to avoid it almost so much. I'm going to give you a weird example. If you ever watch the show Smallville, you know, the story about Superman growing up or Clark Kent growing up, by the time they got to the last season, they were avoiding so much. They were going out of their way to not show the Superman costume. And then at a certain point, you're just like, to have him show up as Superman, for crying out loud. And the move, like the last season or two of Smallville, became them trying to not show Superman. In a lot of ways, I feel like some of these scenes, they go out of their ways to not acknowledge that there's magic, even though it's clearly happening with what we see on screen. So that's my big issue with it. But overall, it's a sweet little charming story. I had a listener tell me this week that if I say charming, they know it's going to be something they'll like. So I'll give this one a shot. I think you'll like it. It's charming in its own right. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next one I want to talk about is The Burnt Orange Heresy. A pompous art critic is given a chance to interview an artist long thought disappeared and tap into his most recent works.
At the edge of my property, there's a dilapidated little house. In this house, there's an artist.
No critic has spoken to this guy in over 50 years.
Jerome Debney.
Think of the splash it would make. You could be running a major museum soon.
And why would you do this for me?
I'd value a Debney James.
What is this about?
Redemption, embezzlement, and forgery.
This is most interesting to me because of the cast. First of all, it stars Donald Sutherland as this artist who seems to have disappeared. And the backstory of him is all of his stuff had gotten burned in a gallery fire. And there's no existing artwork of his, and he's still alive, and this guy gets a chance to interview him, and that artist is played by Donald Sutherland, and I love Donald Sutherland as an actor, and so it's great to watch him work in this movie. You also have Mick Jagger as an art collector who kind of sets this all in motion, and Mick Jagger does a great, he's actually brilliant in this because, first of all, it's Mick Jagger. He's done movies before, but we haven't seen him in a while or in a whole lot of them. And you're reminded of the screen presence he has in addition to his stage presence. And the other thing about Mick Jagger is he plays it in such a way that you don't know how much he knows. You don't know how much more he knows than the other characters. And I wanted more of that. Unfortunately, he's only in a handful of scenes. I would have been more interested in him. It also has Elizabeth Debicki in it. And she was in The Night Manager on TNT. And she was in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. She was in The Great Gatsby. I've always liked her. And you get to see a lot of her, if you know what I mean. But she's also quite good in the movie as well. And the guy who plays the art critic, you can take or leave him. But the problem I had with this movie is, like, the first hour 20 minutes is a little bit dull. It takes a while to get into it because you're just, oh my gosh, the pretension of this art critic and how pompous and arrogant he is. And I'm just so annoyed with this guy. And then, you know, they get to a point where there's finally something cool happening. Like, the last 20, 30 minutes of the film is the movie I wanted to see for the whole film. And I've been running into that a lot lately with these movies where it's like they have this setup, but they take an hour or more to give the setup and you're just kind of bored with it. And then finally something starts happening. You're like, yes, this was the movie I wanted to see. Could you have started that an hour beforehand? So even if you watch the trailer to this, I mean, I played, you know, a bit of it, but if you watch the full trailer, you're going to see a much more interesting movie than what you think you're getting for the first hour and a half or so. I'm not a big fan of movies about art. Like, there was that movie with Clive Owen and Juliette Binoche several years ago, I think called Words and Pictures. There's multiple Vincent van Gogh movies out there, but I find those a little bit dull. I think, like, the art heist movies, you know, stuff like Danny Boyle did an art heist movie, and that I thought was interesting. And I thought the Thomas Crown Affair was interesting, but at least they had something interesting going on during the art stuff. So ultimately, this movie was okay for what it did, but so many times I've seen this happen where the movie changes course in the middle and it becomes a different type of movie, and I wish they would either, you know, set that up a little bit earlier. But still, The Burnt Orange Heresy, I'm right on the fence on this one. I think I'm going to give it a kind of rock simply for no other reason than the performances of Donald Sutherland and particularly Mick Jagger.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about An American Pickle and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Black Books. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's continue on with the final movie reviews. And this final movie review is An American Pickle. This is on HBO Max. And like I said, throughout this pandemic, I've had to dip into the streaming services to cover some of the new stuff. Because not only is there not a whole lot in theaters, because a lot of theaters are open, there's a lot of stuff that's been driven to on demand. And there's been multiple movies that went from theatrical releases to being put on Netflix or Amazon or Hulu or Apple TV or anything. So it certainly is relevant to cover some of these new streaming services, not to mention the fact that everybody's now got a freaking streaming service now. HBO already had HBO Go, but now they've got HBO Max, which is aligned with Warner Brothers. So there's an awful lot of Warner Brothers stuff going on there. But for some strange reason, the Harry Potter movies, which are Warner Brothers properties, got pulled off of HBO Max and put onto Peacock. It really doesn't matter with these because you can't watch either of these on a lot of TVs. You either need a new smart TV that can download those apps, but you can't like use a Roku box or an Amazon Fire Stick. It's these services like HBO Max and Peacock, and for that matter, Quibi, until you can put that on an older version of a Roku box or Fire Stick, you're cutting out part of your market. I understand that the target market for this stuff is always the younger viewer. I mean, I got kids. I know they watch stuff all the time on their phones. And I'm not asking for TikTok for as long as that sticks around. I'm not waiting for that to be able to be streamed to your TV. But, you know, if you're just catering to just people 20 to 25 and younger, you're an idiot. You need to cater to the people who are home, especially the people who are stuck at home. And right now, if you want to talk about people who are at home needing these streaming services, these are the people that are immune compromised and are higher risk areas, which are older folks. Give them all the content. I mean, like, I was telling some of this stuff to my mom, and she was like, she's not going to watch this crap on her phone. She wants to be able to sit down and eat dinner and watch, you know, Diagnosis Murder on cable or whatever. So if you want to give her something new, make it something that she can watch relatively easy on her TV. Me too. So I am going to be covering these, but, you know, HBO Max and Peacock, you guys got to get your stuff sorted out if you really want people to watch it. Because who wants to watch Harry Potter on a phone that's 3 inches wide? Anyways, let's talk about an American pickle. Seth Rogen stars as a Jewish immigrant to the U.S. who falls in a vat of pickle brine and is preserved for 100 years to wake up in modern-day America with only one living relative left.
We are the Greenbaums, and we have American dream. I find good job in pickle factory. Then one day, everything changed.
It's been 100 years. The pickle brine preserved him perfectly.
We were able to track down a great-grandson.
Greenbaum!
Greenbaum!
This is nuts.
This is not pickle business.
That's a very stupid idea.
Not only is it the first HBO Max movie that's original, and by original, I'm putting all that in quotes. First of all, just let everybody know, there are some movies that are original. Like if you look at Netflix producing The Irishman, versus a movie like An American Pickle, which I believe was made and then acquired by HBO Max. So while it's HBO Max's exclusive, they did not go out and produce this necessarily. So an American Pickle dropped, I think, on Thursday. And the movie itself, I think, is a neat idea. And it's got Seth Rogen playing himself as the Jewish immigrant who's 100 years old plus, and also playing the modern version of him. And it has some funny moments, but the tone is really all over the place. You know, it starts off as this sweet little love story that has some funny moments while he's back in the old country and then in the new. And then, you know, we fast forward and then it's this sort of culture clash of old world versus new world. And then they kind of have a feud. And then it's this weird story of this guy making a pickle empire. It was originally written as a book, and I guess the book worked, but it's really clunky in what the goal of the thing is. It keeps changing whether you're supposed to like this guy or not. And the same thing with the younger guy that he plays. It's really, really alarmingly uneven at times. And I would say if you were to carve out like 15 minutes, the right 15 minutes in different places work within themselves, but it's getting all those 15 minutes chunks to work together. And it's almost like the movie doesn't know what it's trying to do. It's still kind of working on concept. Look, if you already have the HBO app, fine. Watch it. It's not a total waste of time, but it really was kind of disappointing. I was surprised because I was kind of interested to watch it. So I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's home cinema spotlight is on something that's nothing new, but it's something I've recircled back to get to. recircled. I guess that means that, and I've come around to this a couple times. One of the things I have, just that's just sort of like my own thing I do, is I have TV and cinematic comfort food. There's a lot of movies and television shows that I'll just recycle and I'll rewatch now and then. Like every summer I watch The IT Crowd. I have a lot of fun with that. I love that show. Every winter I rewatch Red Dwarf. You know, at Halloween, I watch Halloween 3 and the original Halloween. I try and watch The Thing once a year. On St. Patrick's Day, I watch Leprechaun. On Easter, I watch Night of the Lepus. So I watch all these movies multiple times over the course of multiple years. And so the summer came and I started watching The IT Crowd. And I love The IT Crowd. It's a British show. I tried an American show and that version was terrible. But The IT Crowd's a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it and I'm still watching it. But I usually burn through it in a weekend because I like it so much. But it's almost too lighthearted for me at this point. And maybe this is the pandemic sinking in and the stay-at-home orders and the coronavirus and knowing it's out there and worrying about myself and my family and my mother and everybody else in my direct life. And now we're looking at kids going back to school and my wife's a teacher. So there's a lot of stress in there. And especially if you're sitting at home, it can really wear on you and you can... You know, it shows that there are certain mental illness struggles that are being amplified by being at home. And that's one of the things that movies and TV can do. It can help you cope. And what I found interesting was I started watching Black Books because it's done by the same, well, it's the Graham Lynham who did The IT Crowd. He did Black Books. He also did Father Ted before it. And he had a collaborator for both of those. I think IT Crowd was his own thing. And no, I'm not going to address he stepped in a bear trap. You know, you can't be an old Irish Catholic all your life and navigate Twitter. I guess you're going to run into some problems. I'm not going to address that because that's neither here nor there for these shows. I think they're funny shows and I'm not going to get into any sort of cancel culture with them. But anyways, Black Books, it's a much more depressing show. It's the character played by Dylan Moran. It is this misanthropic turd of a human, and he engages in ritualistic self-destructive behavior. And normally that gets on my nerves, but for some reason it worked for me this time. So let me talk about Black Books. Bernard Black is a misanthropic owner of a London bookshop who'd rather spend his days smoking, drinking wine, and reading, much to the chagrin of optimistic Manny, who's trying to run the bookstore.
Oh, isn't this nice?
It's rubbish!
I'm back now.
I know!
You shouldn't be ashamed of getting professional help.
I mean, I should talk to a...
Barman.
It's about self-respect.
This is fantastic.
Thank you!
What am I doing here?
Feed it, Flaps!
I'm going to ignore that.
You are actually offering sex!
I'm looking for a talent!
The only thing that's going to bring me inner peace is a beard-seeking missile.
No!
There's something wrong with me.
It's all about attitude.
This is insane!
Okay, that was mad.
I always felt overly weighed down by the character of Bernard Black when I've watched this in the last couple years, but for some reason, I identify with him a little bit more. And I'll tell you, I burned through Black Books in about the time I normally burn through The IT Crowd. And The IT Crowd, usually, I get through that in a week or two. And then this one, Black Books, I just watch as saying, well, I'll just use this to fill the time. But there's something about the depressing nature of what's going on in our lives collectively that makes Black Books so much more relatable. And I don't know what that says about me, but I have to say, if you're a fan of Graham Lynham's work, if you've watched The IT Crowd or Father Ted and you want to check out something else, check out Black Books. It's very funny. It's very dark. It has these moments of surrealism. IT Crowd has that as well. But there's even more surrealism in this show. It treads that weird line of reality, and it's got some brilliant stuff in there. It's on Amazon Prime, all three seasons of it. Of course, there's only about 6 episodes per season, so you'll burn through this very fast because it's about 25 minutes a show. But hey, if you want to see something different and not very lighthearted, but also something that'll make you laugh, drink some wine, read a book. I'm going to say Black Books totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Also available on DVD and Blu-ray include Swallow and the Doctor Who Tom Baker years, season 3, in which they introduce Leela. And that's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Project Power, Sputnik, and Boys State. Until then, have a fat time at the movies and at home.